What's going on, guys? We're back with the Contractor Compass podcast. We got episode 27 today. We got the whole crew back, but we do have an addition to the crew here. We got Mike Lang. He's the operations manager for Air Around the Clock. We're going to have some questions for him today. We were just chatting a little bit before we went live. Tom was nice enough to get Mike on this podcast with us today. So, like I said, Mike, free talk. I do the intro just so everybody knows what we're talking about. But now we're kind of free to go wherever we want with the conversation. First question I have, just to kind of start us off. So if you don't mind, just for the people that are going to listen to this, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the industry, and then about the company, how long you've been with Air Around the Clock, kind of giving us an idea how that all played out and, where you guys are today in terms of size of the business, just so people know who they're listening to.
Well, when I was a young man, my sister and my brother went to college, and my father was in the appliance business, and he fixed washers, dryers, and dishwashers. And I graduated high school, and I did not get very good grades, and I was screwing around. And my dad was like, why don't you go to school for refrigeration? And if you learn refrigeration, we can fix air conditioners, and we can fix refrigerators, and we'll make more money. So I did. I went to school. I went to Lincoln Tech in Union, New Jersey. And I learned refrigeration. I learned air conditioning. And we started doing, obviously we did refrigerators right off the bat, but we did wall units before we started to switch to central units. And actually the first central unit that we did was for one of the Isley brothers, who was like an R&B band back then. And it was a beautiful house, you know, on a Saturday, Rudolph Isley. And he tipped my father and I $100 a piece after we were done. And this is 1980, which was like $500 a piece.
Yeah.
So, wow, Dad, that was a really good idea. So we grew the business there and did well. We had six guys working for us. And then my dad, sadly died of leukemia at 59. My wife grew up in Florida. She wanted to move back. So we moved back to Florida. And I started a business here doing appliances and air conditioning and was at it for a while. And I met the guys from Air Around the Clock. My daughters played fast pitch softball. They were 8 years old at the time. And that was 26 years ago. And they convinced me after knowing them for a year to come and put my business in with their business. And we went into it together. And at the time it was about 10 trucks. And now it's 185 employees with 135 trucks. And we cover from North Miami to Vero Beach, which is where I live. And then we also cover the West Coast from Marco Island to Fort Myers. So it really grew.
It's a wow.
Big business. We're the number one ream dealer in the United States for 17 years in a row now.
I didn't know the 17 year thing, but I did know you were number one with ream. Tom, you mentioned that before. So your dad was actually you said he was in appliance repair before you even, okay.
Yes, so my dad was a washing machine man, and he had made a good living. I was proud of my dad. I mean, they'd ask me what I do. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, they would have you write, what do your parents do? And I tell them, my dad's a washing machine man. My son ended up going to Cal undergraduate, and then he actually went to Wharton for business school. Okay. And he said his friends asked him what his dad did, and he said, my dad's a washing machine man. And they said, they're like, what's the response? And they're like, well, he must fix a lot of washing machines. But like with kids, with fathers had a Citibank and, you know, Chase and all kinds of stuff like that.
Correct.
Really neat. Yeah, yeah.
That's so really awesome.
It's a good story, yeah.
I was going to – that is actually kind of cool because one of the things I was going to ask is if there was a certain thing that drew you to the industry, but it was kind of just natural evolution with your family.
It really – it's like in the blood for real. I mean, I've been doing it my whole life. My wife answered the phones. We have three children. They're all older now. I have seven grandkids. But my wife answered the phones. I have twin daughters, and my son was older than them. So she watched the kids, answered the phones, and did all the book work and dispatched it all. And, like, we would call, like you guys, like today. It's so easy. You know, we would call, like we now press our phone and tell the people we're on our way there. We would call from call to call. We'd use the customer's phone in the house. Like we'd get done with a call and see, you know, call and say, where are we going next? And we had pagers.
Crazy.
And then we'd stop at a phone booth and call in. Okay. So that's how that worked. And it really worked that way. Let me tell you.
That's beautiful.
And at the time too, we had digital pagers where my wife would call into a service and it was text. Do you remember those? Did you ever remember see any of those?
A little square
box like this, and you would read a note on it, like go to Mrs. Jones or whatever. Boom, boom, boom. That was, and then we went to Nextel. Remember Nextel with the beep beep? You know?
I remember that one.
And we had Motorolas in all the trucks. We had Motorolas. My wife had a base at home. She touched the base. I've been through the whole series of things, but they made the air conditioners a lot better then than they do now. I could tell you that much. You know, they've gotten so. more sophisticated now. I'll tell you what, the appliances were harder than air conditioners because the appliances were all different, like a Maytag, a GE, a Whirlpool, Kenmore. But, you know, what's the, you got a compressor, you got a contactor, you know, you got capacitor. It's pretty much the same.
Yeah. So yeah.
Easier. Yeah.
To that point, Mike, you just mentioned, like, you know, your family, a lot of kids. I mean, and you've been doing this for a long time, literally ground up pretty much. How'd you manage that? How did you grow a company to 180 employees, 135 trucks? And like, how was the work-life balance? Was there work-life balance while it was scaling really hard? I mean, a lot of guys are going to wonder that, like, oh, I don't know how much time was put in. How much, you know, what has to be sacrificed? What does that look like?
You're not wrong. I work Saturdays for, I think I quit working Saturdays about 3 years ago, basically. Wow. And, you know, Saturday was a busy day. I'll give you an example. I was a kid. I was going to a swim club that we belonged to with my mother and my brother. And, my father brought me up a wall unit up the stairs and stuck it in my window and said, here, now you're going to be cool. And I said, great, Dad, it's, you know, let's go to the swim club with Mom. And he's like, I can't, it's Saturday. I have to work, Michael. This is everybody's home. This is my busiest day of the week. Yeah, so he was making it, that meant a lot. That stuck with me. I was 12 years old. And I remember that. I remember him coming up the stairs because he was sacrificing for me, you know, so that it was cool with him. And my friends would all come to my house because my dad was the air conditioning guy. They had no air conditioners. And they'd come to my house and so they'd hang out in my room and we'd play because it was cool in my room, you know. But there are a lot of sacrifices too. And I made time though with the kids. I coached, you know, my son in football and the girls in fast pitch softball. And I went to all the games and stuff. I just would work it around my schedule a bit. You can do it. But it's hard work. This is not an easy industry. It's a tough industry.
No, correct. You
know? Yeah, and the thing about it is, in air conditioning, is I know all these guys out there know the expediency, particularly in South Florida. You know, we're same day service. We do same day installs. It's 20. It's really 24/7. My phone is here on my side, and it's with me all. It's everywhere here.
Yeah,
everywhere I go, this is with me. You know, and I sleep with it next to the side of my bed, you know, like on my end table on the side of the bed to this day. And I answer all the time. And that's a big part of the people, you know, the service. And I networked myself a lot. I met a lot of people. Yeah. I didn't realize in Florida, you know, you have doctors, lawyers, and air conditioning guys because the need is that great. But what we did too is we did a lot of advertising and we bought a lot of businesses. We bought a lot of smaller guys. Yeah, we did. Guys that were retiring and going out of business, a lot of phone numbers. Back then, especially, you had local phone numbers. That now you don't know where the numbers are coming from anymore. But back then, it was like, you know, with a number was one town to the next had a different exchange. It would be Dumont 5, you know, 385. You know, I have a number that I sold the business that I had, which was 201-385-1382, that I sold to one of the guys that worked for me. That that number is still in existence, and my dad turned it on when I was 7 years old. And I'm 67 now. It is 60 years old, that number.
That's beautiful.
And he's still doing it.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, man, that's – go ahead, Jason.
No, I was just – I was curious because definitely when you start to talk with like kind of bigger type companies that have gotten to that threshold, right? A lot of the small companies, a lot of our audience is kind of the starter type companies that are trying to really navigate the waters, figure out how can I get from 2 million to 5? How can I get from 5 to 10? Like I know a lot of people, so one of my past businesses was a consultant going into businesses and a lot of them was all small mom and pops. And I'd go in and try to help them get the KPIs and metrics and everything, systems and processes in place, and get them over that threshold. But the one consistent theme I always saw was where a lot of these businesses would hit that wall, right? And they start to think, okay, is it time for me to start acquiring, right? Because I know the two things is either you can do it organically or acquire. And there was a guy that he does about 250, 300 million a year. And I asked him the same question. I said, man, when did you hit that wall? When did you decide, hey, it's time to either go this way and acquire or continue to dump in and try to do it organically? So when was that time really for you guys? Like, was it at the, not the specific number, was it a 5 million mark, a 10 million mark, or was it fluid?
It's a good question. It was really about the $3 million mark is really what it was. And the thing that you guys got to really realize too is, you know, the guys out there that were listening to us as well, is what I'm talking about, is a lot of them will hold a note. Okay, so don't look at it like you can't just get it. You know what I'm saying? Like I bought a business in Fort Myers just recently because we wanted to go over there, and it was a couple hundred thousand dollars. And the guy, you know, we gave him $100,000 down, and we're paying them out, which is the business is paying for it. Okay. You have to think of it that way too, you know.
Correct.
A lot of these guys, you know, it's not an easy thing to sell your business. It's usually a pain in the ass. So a lot of these guys, and a lot of the guys that are retiring, they appreciate getting a check for the next few years. They're going to get it each month. You know, obviously you have to sign a note. If you don't pay them, they're going to get it back. But you know, if you're serious about what you're doing, and I just bought a lot of small, you know, $250,000, $500,000 businesses, but you know, come up with 100, come up with 50, whatever you think you can come up. Don't be afraid to ask. Talk to the people, and you know, it's a negotiation like anything else. But a lot of these guys might really want it paid out. They you know, they've saved up. They don't maybe not need the whole hit at one shot.
Yeah.
And they're moving it. You're going to send them a couple of grand a month or whatever, $1,000 a week, you know, any kind of setup like that. You know, we did. We also started doing plumbing too, and we didn't start doing plumbing until about 3 years ago. And
I
bought two different plumbing businesses. One of them had six guys working for him. Worked out really nice. We got a good
guy
that's running it. It's just we just kept acquiring it.
So that's amazing. I love hearing that. And really, for me, one big part to really try to get business owners to understand that are the small that are at that 2-3 million mark is when you start looking at their marketing budget, because they always do that. They're like, hey man, I'm spending $250,000 a year in marketing. And I want to look at them and say, it's time to acquire, right? If you're really having a tough time organically to grow, start acquiring. You're going to get that book of business in, and you can pivot off of that and then continue to build from there. So that's awesome. I really appreciate that. So one of my other questions is, and this is the big challenge, right, that I think everybody in the United States is facing, definitely a client I have right now is facing it. Other people we've talked to is employees, right? The employee base. How are you guys handling and overcoming those challenges? Not to shift gears too quickly, but how are you guys handling that? What are you seeing in the market, in the employee market? I can tell you on our side, it's abysmal to say the least. It's tough to find them, tough to get them to stick. The attrition is a massive, you know, it's really, it doesn't matter if you're paying 100% of benefits. You know, I see everybody throwing everything but the kitchen sink at these potential employees out there, and maybe average tenure is, you know, 3 months to a year at this point. Well,
I could tell you, I'll give you that answer in just 1 second, but as far as the advertising part of it, we spend $2 million a year advertising. Okay.
So
and we get co-op, you know, from Ream, we get co-op from our distributor, but we do billboards, we do TV, we do radio. If you don't know who we are and you're in South Florida, you don't even walk out your door or turn your television on. I mean, I do radio. I do radio. I do TV. I'm Mike Langfinger on the clock. I mean, it's a continual thing. But what I did when I was small, like these guys, get some door hangers. And like, I'm going to just give you a real quick thing on advertising. I would go to the customer's house and I'd take a couple of door hangers and walk a couple of doors this way, a couple of doors that way, whatever. But the funny thing I found out about advertising, which was, I would go to somebody's house in New Jersey, particularly there was a lot of cul-de-sacs. So I would have my van. My vans are all lettered. We got everything lettered. Everything is the trucks are like running billboards. Okay. Yeah. And I would go to a customer's house, do a call. And the next day the neighbor would call me. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, you must've talked to your neighbor. I was just at their house yesterday. No, I saw your advertising, which I started to realize, no, that people are attracted. If they live in the same neighborhood, they're attracted to the same type of advertising. That's how they ended up with the same type of house in the same neighborhood. So that's an interesting. Well, you can get hot with that. If you realize you're getting action out of a neighborhood like that, there's something about what you're doing that's attracting them to that.
Yeah. Be the big fish in a small pond, saturate the small neighborhoods.
If you're small, start putting it all over the place. Carry cards, sticker everything, man. I was like, sticker the world. And my guys, they before they leave a call, they take pictures of everything. We do that, you know, we download the pictures, but the last thing they take is a picture of the sticker on the unit, because the people move, you know, like once we get the customer, we don't want to lose the customer. That's what it's about. As far as the guys, you're right. It's like charades down here in South Florida. They go from company to company. We do, you know, we have health insurance. We do 401k. You know, we're really organized like that. But where we are with it, we see how what the guys can do. Like we pick them out. We have different guys that are really good. Other guys aren't so good. In the winter when it slows down, we'll have the guys that aren't so good ride with the better guys to learn more. I had a mechanics meeting this morning. I spoke to them about take your time now. It's slower now. We're not rushing you. What we want you to do is we want you to get better. Now get better at your craft. you know, every day as I do it, I learn something different every day. Yeah. To this day, I learn something different every day. So the thing is, slow down, take a look at it. You know, I got to the point where I could just walk up and hear it. You know, I could listen to a condenser from outside. You know,
exactly.
My wife answering the phone would say, you know, with the refrigerator, a Whirlpool refrigerator with a squealing noise, it's a bad evaporator fan motor. A GE washer, oil on the clothes, a bad transmission. It's the same complaints. A lot of the times, you'll see. And when some of the units, when the newer units especially, will have the same things wrong with them because, you know, like we had, you know, years ago, we had problems with the Rheem coils. And you started to see what happened to perpetuate. But the guys, it's hard. I mean,
you're
wrong. It's finding, as with the amount of employees we have, it's really difficult. We have guys, though, that, like with the installers, that a lot of them are from the islands here down here in the Caribbean, and they'll go back in the winter. You know, they'll go back, and then they'll come back in April.
Gotcha.
So we're lucky with that part of it. So we don't have to carry the
100%.
It's a lot to carry.
That's really where I think the division that I think is the biggest challenge right now. And this is kind of a two part question, or one's a statement then a question. But definitely install is the section where I see is the biggest hang up for most companies is trying to keep installs in there. It's definitely a grueling, you know, position. I was an installer, so I get it. But heck, half these kids are getting paid 30, 35 bucks an hour, 40 bucks an hour to do what I did at 17 bucks an hour, right? And it's insane. And then they're just having such a hard time hitting their work orders and being their job times and getting, you know, a three zone done in, you know, a day, and they want 2 days or they want 3 days to get it done. It's like, man, the job costing is just not there to be able to fit that in. And then you're fighting between your sales team and then your install team. Install wants more time. Sales wants to sell for less, right? So you're always dealing with that balance. How's that working out for you?
We'll do 8 zones of air conditioning in a day and a pool heater along with it. I mean, I have a guy in Golden Beach in Miami that has 16 zones of air conditioning and 2 pool heaters that we're at like all the time. So you can see the people walking in the background.
Yeah. They're all interested in what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's not easy with the installers. I'll give you an example. When I was going to drop off a grill to one of the guys who forgot it on the job, and my wife was with me, and we were going to a friend's house, and the guy came out of the attic, and it was the summer.
Oh,
and I got back in the car, and she goes, he looks like he got hit with a hose. I said, it's 140 degrees. He just came out. I said, well, because of what he's doing, we get to live the life that we lead. Thankfully, you know, these guys work. I appreciate. Listen, my thing is everybody, like the girls that answer the phone, the women that answer the phone, the guys that do the installs, the guys that sell the air conditioners, the mechanics, everybody is just as important in the wheel. The woman has to answer the phone for the guy to go out there. Is he fixing it? Is he selling a new one? The installer is going to put it. Then the money goes in the bank. Everybody gets paid. But nobody's more important than the next guy.
And correct.
The sales guy has to understand how important the installer is. If he doesn't do his job, you can't sell anything. Like it's all equal. And that's what you find a lot. Like the guys that make more money might think, oh, I'm at this higher level. Nobody's any higher level. If they don't do your job, you don't have a job. So
correct.
It humbles you more that way when you think about it.
Absolutely.
To your point there, Mike, it kind of rolls in the next question I had. We're talking about this volume. A lot of these guys, a lot of guys that are listening, that are going to listen to this podcast, they've never had questions like this asked to a company that's doing that type of volume. Okay. They haven't had the chance. So my question for you is, when you get to that stage, how are you managing quality control and managing how many heads of departments do you have? How does that get structured to where you can make sure things are getting done right? The customer's happy. Customer satisfaction is high. Quality of work is good. How is that managed at that level with 180 employees and 130 something trucks?
It's difficult. And we have part runners. Like there's going to be always, you're going to go, we go as high as 30 installs in a day in the summer. Okay. We
do
5,000 air conditioners a year. Okay. 5,500 a year. Yeah, no, it's that. But we've been in the 35s even in a day. So we have guys that follow up behind that will look at the install, you know, we're diligent with that as far as we try to keep our name the best you can. I'm sitting here right now with this at table. This is a little thing where the guys give the customer, it's to get a good review. Okay. So this would be like here, get the customer to give her a good review, and we pay them $10 if the customer goes online and writes a review. I mean, I'm sitting at the table where I have the meetings with the guys.
Yeah. Stick
stickers. Okay. I got stickers with our barcodes on them.
Yep. Exactly.
And we have that on the Vans even. I've got the barcodes on the Vans even as
well. Yeah. That's a nice marketing play. I saw this one truck that was doing it. And what they did, they had the side of it lettered, right? And then the back of it on the door was just a big QR scan code. And it said on the top, you know, you want to. And right.
That's funny.
Everybody wants to do it.
Yeah, it's just, but you're right. The quality control, how many managers? Probably 10 different managers, basically. Yeah.
So a question for you. You're showing that sticker with like the QR code. Is that more of a marketing thing? Or is that like, hey, leave us a review. Tell us how we did. You can connect.
It's just actually to get in touch with us at any time you want. Like, you
know, correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay, cool. That's what I thought. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So you're like, you're almost, I like that idea a lot, actually. So
here's
ease of access.
Your wife is hot.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So it's almost, I mean, I like that idea, though, because at that level, I mean, at that level of volume, Ed is gonna, like I said, that's going to be difficult no matter what. But you're almost doing it in a sense that, yes, you have people that are following up. They're looking at work done. But you're making ease of access to reach you to where if something is done, if the customer wasn't happy about something, they're not going to have to try hard to get get it solved.
No, like we resolve issues. I mean, you can't be in business this long and do what we're doing and have this many customers and not resolve what's the problem. We don't hide. If there's a problem, it's condensing unit, the bad compressor, we'll pull the unit right out. I mean, we don't. Yeah. And we have that kind of relationship with Rheem because of how much we do, the volume that we do. They're not going to, no question. So we're fortunate for that because if we have a problem, hey, just take the unit out. We'll figure it out later. We don't leave people without air. That's my biggest pet peeve with these guys. We're in South Florida. You got grab the dog, grab the cat, grab the kids. You're out of the house. So you're in a single zone house. You have no choice. Okay. So you know, you got to get them air and we got to figure out, that's why I said, we'll do same day installs. You know, we do them. We're just moving 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But a part of it now is that what these guys have to realize this too, but how big I see Thomas here in the corner over here is the finance part of it is tremendous to us now because the prices, you know, you're really looking average now $8,000 to $10,000, you know, as far as that goes.
What correct.
Is he, what are you putting up?
He's always got his people by payment sign. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, right.
Baby up there.
But listen, the way Thomas and I met is he was working at a company called Okinas and we were doing work with them and they were doing subprime lending. Okay. Because not everybody has great credit. So we got to be friends and I saw how well we did with subprime lending. He called me up and told me he was leaving. And I said, hey, why don't you meet me? I'm going to be up in Tampa. It's my anniversary. I'm going to the Hard Rock with my wife. We're going to Burns and that stuff. So he met me for lunch. And I said, listen, I know you're leaving there. Why don't you come down? You could be the director of finance and we'll use the waterfall and we'll do the subprime lending and see how it works out. Well, we made $2 million more that year, the next year.
Oh, yeah.
So the next year, I said, you know what? We could spread this around and we could help other guys because realize the market, like we'd use Synchrony, we'd use Wells, but those scores
that's
are
tough. High. Those are all prime lenders. Yeah,
so you got to be able, people don't have just $8,000 and $10,000 laying around. Most people do not have that. So, you know, like he's right. His people buy payments. It's a true story. And he does, our guys call up, he's got the service. He's got the people on the phone. It's like when you go to a car dealer. You know, what happens? You go, the guy, sales guy goes out there and he takes you to the room and the room, do you want the tire package? Do you want the paint package, the whole thing? So we do that. And Thomas, so like if our guys didn't offer them a 10-year labor warranty, his people will offer them a 10-year labor warranty on that side. We do really well with it. If those guys, any of you guys out there, the 10-year labor warranties are amazing now since they have. Yeah, you got the 10-year parts warranties. Now you give them the 10-year labor warranties, and we do, you know, the maintenance is every 6 months. It's great. You have happy customers because they're not spending money. You get a 2-year-old unit that's got a bad coil, and then you're just going to charge them the labor, and they're crazy from it because why is it broken? And it's your fault. It's not. I didn't make it. Rheem made it. Carrier made it.
Right.
You know, it's not our fault. It's broken. It's great. That's why I said they're not made the way they used to be made. Obviously, you know, the materials aren't the same. And we're obviously.
Just real quick on your guys' same day install. I know I've had a few clients that operated a little bit with that. They had a little struggle getting it off the ground, obviously because of overhead. You know, it's one of the things where it's kind of you got to have some players on the bench, right, ready to go. And they just had a tough time figuring that. How did you guys when you started to launch that program, how did that work out, and any challenges you came across, how did you
we have subcontractors besides guys that are on. We have subcontractors, and that might, you know, like in the winter now, this might be the only job they get all week, so they'll be happy to go at any hour. Okay. Gotcha. I mean, we're putting them in at 6 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, guys will go, they're going to go. Yeah. Cause that's when they work. That really made a big difference, because the guys that are on the clock, you can't just have them sit around and be on the clock the whole time. And we do have salaried guys as far as that goes, but then on top of that, we use subcontractors as well.
That's perfect. Awesome, man. And then, so just real quick on your cert, so kind of two-part question on your service side, are your service technicians, are producing technicians, meaning they have goals they got to hit? And if that's something you implemented, what's your guys' average ticket looking like with your service side?
No,
what would be a healthy average ticket you think should be for a company trying to maintain above water?
Honestly, you know, I really, it costs us like $250 to get through the door by the time you're done with, you know, workman's comp, the insurance on the trucks, the building, the phones, the women that are inside the building. People don't believe that, you know, there's our service call is $125. They're like, oh, it's, you know, we're losing money when we get a service call, you know?
Right.
I see it now, though. I would say an average ticket is $500, at least $600 bucks. And I could see it with other companies. I mean, here in South Florida, there are so many air conditioning companies, but that's really an average ticket. Yeah. No doubt about it. Yeah. Don't be afraid to charge, because it really is costly. Yeah. I mean,
so how do you guys,
like crazy.
Yeah. How do you guys stay? Cause obviously you guys are a large operation. I'm taking it, obviously, doing that many installs. Install is your primary revenue generator. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So your service team, is your service team more so just an assist to your install department as far as taking care of callbacks, taking care of existing customers?
Yes and no, because we do a ton of repairs too, obviously. But we're on our third round of putting units in. How it comes 30 years old.
Exactly.
Like 10 years. And it's South Florida. They're about good for 10 years. You know, we tell the customers, it's like, we'll be there in 8 years and the coil's looking dirty, and we'll tell them, you know, the guys will be doing a PM, and I'm telling, it's like, you know, plant the seed. They're on their way. It's going to start thinking about what you're going to do. And a lot of people are sharp now here, and we could give good deals in the winter. We keep a giant inventory. I mean, if I could show you around the building, I mean, we have an amazing amount of inventory. That's why we could do the same day installs too, because we're not going to get it. Which is a big advantage. I mean, we're not running over to the distributor to get it on a weekend or anything like that.
100%.
We're doing them on Sundays in the summer and stuff like that. We're full tilt all the way. You know, we're constant. Yeah. So it's hard for the little guy to keep up with us from that aspect, because it's just so big, you know, that's a hard nut to get over. I can tell you that much. That took a lot. Absolutely. to get this big, to get to be the number one Rheem dealer, I thought was just such an amazing accomplishment, but to stay it was harder.
Yeah.
I really thought that, like, when we got there, I was like, wow, this is like, you know, what an accomplishment. And then to keep doing it, because then everybody's after you, you know, they're
correct.
They're constantly biting at you, you know, and it's on your tail, and they're trying to figure out what you did.
Correct.
Like, how did you get there, and how, you know, why aren't I doing it, and why isn't it going like that for me, kind of thing, you know?
On that note, Mike, one thing I wanted to ask, and each question really that we've been talking on is fed more and more into it, all the way from people buy payments. So you're in a super aggressive market. I mean, your average ticket price for install is lower, right, than a lot of the country, right? Yes. So how do you, knowing that it costs you $250 to walk in the door, how do you stay competitive? Because also a crappy part about your market is there are a hell of a lot of people that are not licensed. There are a hell of a lot of people that how do you stay competitive? How do you win deals? How, obviously the easy answer is always show them we're accredited and blah, blah, but how really, when people are price tag, how do you do it?
Because with the volume that we buy at, we can sell at. Okay. Like, we can pass the savings along to the customer, because we're not buying at the same price as Joe Schmo is. We're not. And we're buying for hundreds less, really. For
the
units. Okay. We're doing units for $6,500, you know, two ton units. And we'll do $6,500, $7,500. That's a normal ticket. Plus, we're pretty, here in Florida too, we do a lot of multi-zone homes. I mean, you know, Yeah, there's a lot of two and three zone homes. And then we do pool heaters too. We do Raypak pool heaters, you know, the Rheem pool heaters. Yep. And now it's pool heater season. I was just talking to the lady that does it. We got 10 calls today in just pool heaters, which is great off season. You know, I mean,
100%.
Now it's cool. And now, okay, so that slows down. This picks up. You know, that's all. For any of these guys out there too, it's being in a seasonal business is really tough. It's like being in a swimming pool business. You know, it's like that's the whole, getting through the off season. I mean, we're taking money out of the bank in the winter and putting it in when it's 20, you know, it's like December, January, February. I mean, the weather's perfect here in Florida. You don't need the air conditioning. You really don't.
Mike, how long ago did you add that pool heater? That's a little golden nugget. We literally just moved past really, really fast.
Yeah.
I think that's a good note. Well, how long ago did you add that?
My next door neighbor. Okay. My next door neighbor. No kidding around. He owns a giant pool company. They do like 300 pools a year, and he belongs to this conglomerate of other ones guys that are friends of his that do like 300 pool heaters a year. Okay. So I belong to a country club that he belongs to as well. And I was at the bar and he's having a drink with me, and he's like, gets a call, and he's got a customer that he just put a pool in for. And the pool heater doesn't work. And the guy won't give him the check for the final check for like $20,000. So I sent my guy over there. He fixed it. The guy gave him the check for $20,000, brought it over and dropped it off to us. And he said, why aren't you doing pool heaters? Like, you know, you guys know it's stuff. And that's actually I moved into the house 3 years ago. I belong to the club for like
that is crazy.
It was just like, but that's also, I was going to say, it's also the people you meet, you know, that's how when you get to a certain size too, it's in the kind of some of the places you're in. Like we do all the Miami Dolphins, you know, because of the radio and the TV advertising, you get to meet all of these people and stuff like that. That perpetuates itself, you know, the people at the station that work at the station, then they know who you are. It's been a process a building process that's really worked out great actually.
So before you go, Jace, a couple things I got out of that. One, it's good to have good neighbors, and that worked out really well. Second thing, I'm assuming you have guest pass at your country club, so I'll be down like next month.
You should, and we got great golf. When you play golf, I mean, you want to come.
I got like a 16 handicap, so not great, but I'll be down there.
that's okay. I'm terrible. Don't worry about it.
That's beautiful. Sorry, Jace. Go ahead.
No, that's good. No, now I know why you said you wanted to come visit, Colton. So I live in North Augusta, so. I guess my question would be to the listeners, right? Is if you could rewind time, right? Let's go back to when you guys are at that 3-4 million mark. What would be your advice to somebody at that point? Like they don't have the scale to get their equipment cheap, right? They're paying, you know, retail pretty much. You know, they don't have all the marketing in place just yet to really get up and going. But they're really trying to figure out how do I get to the next level? Because this is really
You got to network your community. Okay. That's really, I'm going to tell you, if you want, start putting your banners at schools, start putting your banners in churches. They have a lot of church bulletins. Mm-hmm. Those people are loyal to that. They encourage them to call the people in the bulletins. And that's how you get to know the other people. And a lot of these guys are young guys with kids and stuff, sponsor the kids' sports team and get to talk to the people that are there. And then they'll use you and then their friends will use you. And that's a really grassroots. That's really how we got it going.
Leveraging your community.
Yeah. Well, the guys that I work with are this, you know, that we've been together for so long. We've all kind of all our kids played sports and we all did the same, you know, we're all involved. And that's how I met, you know, the guys that I'm here with. My daughter's playing fast pitch softball. They were 8 years old at the time, you know? So it's you got to have some personality to it. You got to bring personality to it and speak to people and, you know, forward. This is what I do. Hey, I'm in the air conditioner. And then when you go to the games, you bring your truck that's all lettered up and everything there. And then people, hey, my air conditioner's broke. Do you have a card on you? You know, I'll come out. I didn't even, at the beginning of it, I didn't even charge a service charge because I was so confident in what I was doing. I'm like, listen, these guys, you know, they come back and they have like five service charges or something. I'm like, people don't call unless it's broken. To me, there's no such thing as a service charge because there has to be a reason. They don't want to spend money. And listen, I tell the girls, the women that answer the phone, listen, We do appliances too. So we do pump. There's a hot water heater that's leaking. There's a refrigerator that's not cooling. There's an air conditioner that's not working. They're not in a good spot. They don't know how much is it going to cost to fix it. Do I need a new one? So you got to be calm and answer as nicely as you possibly can. But what I'm saying is they're calling for a purpose. There's a reason they're calling. And if you're good at what you do, you go there, you fix it, you take care of it, you charge them, and you make them happy. That's the whole key to the whole thing. That's the key to the success, really. Yeah, and just 100%. Be pleasant and try to figure out what you have in common with people. Like I tell the guys, pull up, don't park in their driveway because your truck might leak oil. Go to the, ladies taking groceries out of the car, grab the groceries out of the car. You open the front door, you ring the doorbell, they open the door, start wiping your feet at the door. You care about their home. Make a good appearance. You're going into their house. Make them feel comfortable that you're going into their house. Hey, they got a fish tank. Hey, I got a fish tank too, and I like fish. But you look for the key things. And the key things are, if you see an inhaler, then maybe you start talking about indoor air quality. If the kid's home from school sick, if they have a dog and a couple of cats, maybe you can use a UV light. Maybe you need an air scrubber. These are the kind of things you got to key up on as you do. Be aware of your environment, and also listen to the customer. They're going to tell you what's wrong. Okay. Like that's what I tell the guys, the main thing when you walk in, ma'am, how can I help you? What seems to be the problem? Is it inside? Is it outside? Is it the condenser? Is it the air handler? Did I have a package unit? Listen to what they're saying. It matters, slow down, pay attention, That's what you can tell these young guys and keep, be aware of your environment. Like I said, really, if you want to sell indoor air quality, though, is to see what, a lot of bottles of water around if they're healthy, workout equipment, that's the kind of things you're looking for. Yeah. Is what I do at my sales meetings.
how about let's add a time. You've been doing it for so long, right? And some guys can't even see. I mean, a lot of guys that are going to listen to this aren't even be able to fathom that type of revenue and volume. But let's add some timeline to the beginning stages. So what did, I know you, when you partnered, they obviously the company wasn't at zero, but what did, zero to 5 million look like? What did 5 million to 10 million look like? What does 10 to 20 look like in terms of like a timeline? Because you mentioned, Jason, you had asked if you were to rewind time, 3 to 4 million, trying to get over that threshold, what would you do, right? You're like, hey, leveraging your community. But what does that look like in terms of like time frame? How long did it take you to do that, make these big jumps? Because a lot of these guys, especially nowadays, that I talk to in the marketing space, they're looking to grow to 5 to 10 to sell to PE is what they're doing. Right. Now, who knows if that's going to be their goal, but what does that timeline look like?
I'll tell you what, those are the hardest parts because after you get above 10, it just perpetuates itself. It just,
because that's what everybody says too.
Because you're buying right then too. So your costs actually come down. They actually don't so much go up, but they come down, but it's that's a hard part to get past and you just got to stick with it and be patient with some of it. And like I said, you just keep start acquiring.
I was going to say acquiring is probably the
easiest. Like I go to these meetings and my dad used to say you could be the best appliance guy in the world, but if the phone doesn't ring, you're sitting at home being the best appliance guy in the world. And that's really what it's about. I mean, you might not be the best mechanic in the world, but if you're never going to get to the house without doing the advertising. You got to have some balls. You just really do. And to be an entrepreneur and you got to make some quick choices. Listen, I learned a lot more from the bad choices than I did from the good choices because they just follow the bad choices. Yep. You don't mull over them long, move on and keep going and go as fast as you can, and be expedient about what you're doing with the customers. Get out there as quick as you can, be as nice as you can and stick to it and follow up with your guys, and follow up. You can do so much more with the computer now. We're so much better. Our guys press on the way. There's a picture of them before they get there. The people see who's coming to the house. They leave. We have cameras in the trucks now too, as well. We know when they open the doors, close the doors, we could shut the trucks off or from automatically. From on a phone, I could shut a truck off. I mean, if there's a problem, we could shut. Our guys take the trucks home at night. The majority of them park at their house. Yeah. So it, you could, I could shut them all off at night. I could turn them all off so they can't go anywhere if we choose to, depending if we have an issue with one of them or whatever like that, which happens, you know, things happen. Try to be, you know, we always have, I'll be honest with you, we always have money lent out. I can't pay my rent. I can't pay my mortgage. I can't pay my car payment, you know, and we don't charge any interest or anything like that. You know, we help them with so many people. I'm having my wife's having the third kid, you know, we try to be there as much as we can, you know, that's significant. Yeah. But for the smaller guys, you got to hustle. It's hustle. Yeah. And it's the game of hustle. That's the most successful guys.
Let me ask you, and this will be my last question, because I know we're coming up at the end of time. But when you were at that acquiring phase, because this is where a lot of people are now probably getting pretty peaking their interest. They're like, okay, I'm at that $3 million mark. I'm spending $250,000 a year in marketing. Maybe I can take some of those funds and purchase and acquire. And that can grow me to the next level instead of trying to do this either through PPC, LSAs, you know what I'm saying, all that. So when you went to go acquire, I guess, how did you locate these companies to acquire? And what did that process look like?
Okay, so the plumbing company, okay? Yeah. The plumbing company we started, I put up a plumbing billboard. And a friend of mine's wife was going by, and she had a friend that was wanted to sell his company that had six people working for him for 20 years. Yeah. And that's how I got the plumbing company.
That's crazy.
But I actually go to business brokers. And I like the guy, can give you an example, the business I just bought in Fort Myers. The business broker just sent me another business now, okay? Yeah. Because I told them, they're small, let me see. I'll just, you know, see if you can gobble up some smaller ones. But like I said with these guys you're talking about, if they want 200 grand, let's say, say I'll give you 25,000 down. You know, don't be afraid to start. You can always come up. Okay. I mean, always go from there, but you know, and see what, if they want, like I said, a lot of these guys want to retire. They don't mind having the revenues coming in. You know, they don't necessarily need it all at once. So you just take shots at it, but a business broker is easy, you know, like you can, and then tell them if it goes well, hey, you know, I look at acquiring another one, you know, with you, and that's their job, and they want to help you. They find the business and find the best business that you can. And they're all over.
Yeah, and just real quick, what is just a little bit of your criteria? Like, what are the few most important things you're looking at?
I was just going to ask that. Yeah, what's your checklist when you're looking at that, buying these companies?
I go ride with them. I go
there, look, you go.
At them, and I go ride with them. Yeah, I get in and ride with them, and I see the way they operate, and I you know, it's a lot of them, you know, want, if they want to sell the trucks, if they want to sell the inventory, I don't need any of those things. So that, I'll take whatever's coming with it, I'm going to take, of course.
Yeah.
But that's what I do. I go ride with them. I pay attention to the phones. I take a look at the phone bills and see, you know, how their phones are, times of day does it ring, how many, what do you install? How many are you doing, five a week? You know, are you doing 10 a week? What are you doing? You know, as far as that goes, how do you make your way through the winter when it's dead? Do you do PMs and stuff like that? Do you, you know, did you do the preventive maintenances that you sold and all things like that? And, you know, I try to figure out what they're doing wrong that I could do right that will make me more.
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching the way they operate, and I'm going to take the way I do it.
And are you rolling them up under your guys' name, or you're keeping it?
I keep their names for a while. Yeah. I keep their names until a couple of years, and then it just assimilates right into it. Then the people, you know, then they know who they're calling. And I keep like the woman I have in Fort Myers. She answers the phone from 8 to 12:30. She's a 68-year-old woman, but she always answered the phone for the guy who was in business for 20 years. So I kept her. So that's all she wants to work. So I let her work what she wants to work, and then the phone just flip over to here. But she knows everybody.
Yeah, she knows everybody. That's it.
I picked up the phone. We picked up the computer with you guys. I mean, I had an email from her that told me, we had a customer we just sold a unit to on Monday. He has a friend of his. Do we give a stipend to them? You know, we'll give $50 to recommend somebody to sell the unit. I said, yeah, absolutely, we'll do that.
That's perfect.
The kind of thing, you know.
That's the kind of thing you wouldn't have if you didn't have her. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. She was part of the business. And if you can keep it that way, why not keep it?
That makes sense.
Right? People know her. And it's great. I mean, and especially over, it's a weird chemistry over there because everybody leaves in the summer. Now it's getting busy over there because everybody's coming back. But she knows them all. So it's like that. That was a great thing to have. And I take all of their computer stuff and put it right into our base. I take everything and just switch it right over. And right off the bat, I do that. That should be done. And I solicit the customers. They'll solicit them back. Yeah, and tell them, you know, I'll think, hit some kind of idea what kind of deal I want to give to them in whatever area it is, and solicit them all, you know, that kind of thing. That's a good thing to do. That works. Yeah, do a mail. Mailings are good. Yeah.
I have a question for you. This is something that's really difficult for a lot of business owners to get over. You're just talking about people and how they're playing a role. And how did you, because you're talking about, you know, we're checking the phones. I've got the computer stuff that we're switching over, right? Obviously, you are not doing, especially at this level, for God's sakes, you're not doing that yourself, right? But how, at that point, when you stepped in and you were smaller and you started acquiring and you're doing all these things and you're wearing all these hats, how did you go through the process to start bringing on or trusting people? Because that bottlenecks some owners so much.
That was hard. Watching people drive away in your trucks for the first time is some of the hardest shit I've ever done. I'm not kidding, man. I mean, because I like cars. I'm a vehicle guy. And I mean, I take care of my things. And man, I mean, I could tell the way a guy lives his life by the inside of his truck. I could legitimately tell you, man, he could open the doors. I used to have a partner that he used to say a sloppy truck was a truck that was making money. And I was like, bullshit, because I can reach into my I could pull out a capacitor, which I know exactly where it is. And you're digging through a pile of stuff like this. And I'm in and out in 2 minutes because you're still looking for the capacitor, you know, the 5x45 that you can't find, you know. But it's like, you can really tell a person's personality and the way they run their life from like looking at the inside. So that's hard. Yeah, that's not an easy thing to do. Yeah, you got to get used to that. And insurance was being, we had 28 rear-end accidents in a year and a half. You know what that's like? We got the cameras in there now. Yeah. So we call them up. What are you doing? You can't use the phone when you're driving the truck. I mean, it's you know, that just eats you up alive. You know, it's
How did you get over those things? Like, I'm really looking for, like, if there's anything, like, for the people that are listening to this, because I work with a ton of guys who cannot let somebody else answer their phone. And I'm going to be honest with you, they're to a point where they cannot do it. They need a full-time CSR. They need one. Yeah. And or if whatever it might be. I'm using answering the phone and calling out outbound as an example. But how did you, from people taking your trucks to people answering your phone calls that would be inbound, to people doing your sales, to people, how did you do these things? Like, how did you get over that? Like, this is the,
The phones to me are the whole thing too. I'm a nut with the phones. We have 1500 phone numbers. I collect phone numbers. Like, somebody goes out, I turn the phone on. I mean, I'm a nut with phones too. That's a whole nother thing unto itself. You're right. It's hard to do. You just got to try to find the best people. I mean, my wife did it for me for 20 years, you know, until we got past her, you know, like if she was no inky, she couldn't do it anymore. Yeah. And like I said, I always answer the phone, you know, it's like, cause somebody's going to need an answer to a question. You just got to get yourself accustomed to it and try to find the best people. That's why I said I left that lady there, because I listened to her and hi, Mrs. She knows, you know, that's the kind what you want right there. And that's still mom and pop. You know what I'm talking about? To get past mom and pop is the hard thing. You can't walk around doing service calls and answering the phone and doing that. I played that game too. And that it's just a mess.
Yeah.
To do.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I have a son-in-law that my niece's husband, who's going to be selling his business in Melbourne. They're moving up to Atlanta. And he started with me and moved up that way and started to do it himself. And he's done well with it. He's got a nice business to sell. I'm like, he's starting to get bigger at it. And I'm like, I'm amazed that he's able to stop at this point and go, he's going to go start all over again there. I mean, he's 45, 46 or something. I'm like, how you doing it? Cause it'd be hard, like you're talking, I'd be hard pressed at this time. And now he's kind of doing it. He's going back and forth right now. He's driving 7-hour drive back and forth. He's playing this game. Like once a week, he's going back and
forth.
That's
insane.
And I'm like, you can't do this for long, because you're gonna run it down the tubes. If you're gonna sell it, you better sell it before you ruin it, you know.
Correct. Yeah.
That's
you're right, it's a difficult thing to do, but these guys gotta get past with the phones. I mean, they think they're doing themselves a favor, they're gonna give all the answers, but it's not that. Go out there and fix the unit. Like, go talk to the customer when you're there. Just get somebody good to answer the phone and book the call, and you're on your way. You know, that's good. You want to contact the customer afterwards when you get in the truck. Hey, you know, the lady in the office just called me. I want to just tell you I'm on my way. But you know, you want to put a more personal touch to it. You got time for that? Do that when you're driving.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got to let it go. And you got with the trucks, you just got to let them, you know, Don't give the
phone number is a good phone number story is a good story if you can make it like really quick, Mike, about the phone numbers.
I started collecting phone numbers a long time ago. My dad did it when people would go out of business. We would turn the numbers on, and that's how I got like some big numbers that we did in air conditioning too. One guy had a company that was he sold it to one of the guys that worked for him, and the guys ran the thing down the tubes, and he ended up not paying the phone bill, and he turned the phones off. And I turned the numbers on, and they actually went into receivership, and they actually deposed me. I had to go to a deposition because the lawyer said that, how did I get the phone numbers? The guy must have sold them to me. And I said, you don't own a phone number. You lease a phone number. Nobody owns it. The phone company owns it. If you don't pay the bill, it's like renting a house. You don't pay the bill, you get thrown out, right?
Yeah.
So the guy said, so you collect numbers? I said, yes, I do. I said, I noticed your number 777-7777. I said, don't turn it off. And he said, why not? I said, because I'll put it on. That's a great number to advertise with. Congratulations. And so they ended up that they sold everything at an auction, and I was there, and the lawyer was there, and I bought the name for $500. He said, I thought I'd see you here. He goes, that was a great idea. He goes, I really looked into that, and you're right. It's just, you can't do anything with it. They leased the number. He didn't pay the bill.
Yeah,
that.
So I used to like, I have a pad in my truck and drive around, look at the guys' trucks on the side, because a lot of times they would turn the numbers off because they didn't want to pay for four different phone numbers. They decided that wasn't. Then they'd call you up, and then you'd have the customer, and then they'd call you up and tell you they wanted to kill you after that.
Yeah,
oh, no. I turned the phone on. You didn't pay the phone bill. Don't blame me. Blame you. You know, kill you. You have my
That's
phone
beautiful.
Number. It's not by mistake that I have it. Okay, you are not the greatest businessman in the world. Like I said, you got to be. You know, I see a lot of these guys. They can fix air conditioners, but they might not be the best businessman in the world.
That's
you got to learn that part of it. That's the part you got to learn.
We talk about that a lot.
Yeah, that's really where it's at. I think we lost.
Last thing, Mike, and then we'll let you go. And I actually have some questions that we didn't even get to. So it'd be great to have you on again sometime for specific topics. But last thing, leaving the guys that are going to listen to this with, and you kind of already answered this, but just any final touches on it. Business from, let's just say, 500,000 to 2 million a year.
Okay.
What are the biggest things that, if you were sitting down with that person, that business owner, and they're like, hey, Mike, I want to get 10 is my ultimate goal. My next step is 5. What should I do? Let's say they're in a good market, right? They're not in the middle of nowhere. They're in a solid market. What kind of advice are you giving that person?
You're going to have to advertise there and advertise at the right timing. Okay. I mean, if you want an instant hit, you could do direct mail pieces. I get instant on from their direct mail pieces. And I do a lot on the internet too, as well. You know, you can do geofencing, you know, you have an area. I love multi-zone areas. I mean, they advertise multi-zone specialists in our advertising. We have Boca Raton here. We have, you know, the Palm Beaches. So yes, I try to hit. And then when you geofence, you can just get a certain zip codes. You can do that way. You know, and just keep pounding away at them, and that's part of it. That's how you do it. Obviously, the time of year is I'm pounding away at them. You know, June, July, August, September. This is like boom, boom, boom. That's where we're, and then you got to dial it back down and come back around at it again. Is basically what it's about. But yeah, you gotta do it. It's a lot more. It used to be, you know, we were double trucked in the Yellow Pages, which, believe it or not, we still are. Believe it or not, that's as hard as believe as that is. But so it was easy. You told to turn to, I call, that's a call to action. Okay. They know their air conditioner is broke. They open up the Yellow Pages, they call. Now you got radio, you got TV, you got the cable cutters. I'm on regular TV, you know, like NBC, CBS and all that. Then I'm on all the other channels, you know, cable cutters and stuff like that. That opened up a whole nother thing. The internet basically destroyed it almost right off the bat, the Yellow Pages, because it diluted it all. It's so much harder to advertise now. And the billboards down here, I mean, a billboard, $5,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's insane.
We got a bunch of them. Okay. Yeah. So, but there's a zillion people. I had the perfect storm. I had a guy, he's stuck in traffic on 595 going into Fort Lauderdale. He goes, I'm stuck in traffic. My wife called, said the air conditioner's broke. I'm listening to Joe Rose on the radio, who's a sports guy. He's one of our guys doing your ad for Air Around the Clock. I'm looking at your billboard, and one of your trucks is next to me, and my wife called and said the air conditioner's broke. Three different ways. stuck in traffic. That was that was most rewarding, I have to tell you.
It's working.
Like I said, if you're not, you know, you don't know who we are, you're under a rock. My kids tell me their friends come into town and they're saying, like, yeah, I saw your dad's billboard. You know what I'm talking about? My daughter said she was listening to a podcast and they're like, oh yeah, we know we're in South Florida. We just saw your wife is hot. Like,
That's a lot of
fun.
That's fun. So funny.
I enjoy that. Beautiful. Advertising is the best part of it. I'm doing, like, tomorrow I'm here, actually, I'm down south to do for Facebook. We're going to do little things for Facebook tomorrow. Yeah. I'm going to interview, like, one of the guys that actually works for us too, as well, one of the service managers.
Perfect. That's awesome.
Facebook ads, yeah. Yeah, that's part of it. So, yeah, you know the deal. So that's
cool.
You got to advertise. You got to spend the money. Yeah. Lay it out.
Yeah. No, I agree. We've talked about that quite a bit.
And also, like I said, like Thomas in the corner, man, you got to get the financing right. And you got to get it. Like, listen, you go in, you don't judge how much money anybody has. You don't know. You could be in the nicest house in the world and they might owe $10 billion and they don't have great, you know, they don't have a great credit score. He can fix it. That's the guy you want to call. Believe me, I'm telling you. I use him every day in my life now. I got tied at the hip, man. We go to conferences together. We have a grand old time drinking together. I could tell you that much.
That's awesome.
For real. Yes.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you guys.
We'll let you go, Mike. This was, like I said, I have a list of things like that we could have talked about that we didn't even get to.
We could do it again. I don't have a problem.
Yeah. It'd be great to have you on for a specific topic. But appreciate the heck out of your time. I think this was, Jace, do you have anything final notes? I'm good. I mean,
I think you wrapped it up pretty nice. I mean, we've been running for, you know, quite some time, and a lot of the topics we have, we touched on today. And I think it's really just one of the big points. One of the big takeaways for me is definitely just to make sure you stay involved in your community. And just, you know, make sure the advertising is on point.
I'm telling you, the community involvement is gigantic. You can own a town. You know, when I moved down here to begin with, I was going to move to Vero Beach, but I realized the population wasn't big enough. But one of the guys that I went to school with did move there in the air conditioning business, and he has an amazingly successful business there called Barker Air Conditioning. And they're doing, I know he's up there with the 10 years with us and stuff. And he made a loyal business out of it and became a very successful guy from it. So it doesn't matter where you are. It showed me it didn't really matter. Because I said to my wife, we'll make a living here. I don't know how great it'll be. That's why we moved to Fort Lauderdale, because there was a lot of people. I thought I'm from in New Jersey. It was a big, so I thought you need the population, but not necessarily.
Nope.
So you guys in the small towns, just, you can do it too. Believe me.
I think the last thing to take away that stuck with me, just of you, Mike, in general, you're running 130 trucks, 180 employees. You're doing a ton of revenue, but listen to he's still collecting phone numbers. He's still doing these things. Yes. You got to have, with, for lack of a better way of explaining it, you got to have that dog in you if you're going to grow a company to this size, or even, you know, to any size that is, you know, successful.
Gotta have the hustle.
Man.
I'll be honest with you guys. I like the business now more than ever, because I like the business end of it. I didn't realize, you know, it is what I did, but I like business and I like the game. It's a real lot of fun. I mean, it still gets me high. I'm getting close to retiring and I'm going to find it really hard to stop. My wife says, you're going to die, I think, but
that won't happen. You'll
probably still be doing that anyway, but whatever.
Just point it right back to Brady. Just say, man, it's hard to retire when you're winning.
I know. Right about that, but it's just, you know, yeah, every dog has their day, I guess, eventually. Yeah, right?
It is what it is.
But no, awesome. Pleasure. If I can help younger guys, I always say, Thomas knows that, I'm more than happy to help other guys. Yeah. I mean, I really am. At this point, that's why the whole finance thing, I'm trying to tell these guys, that's where it's at, man. You got to figure that out. Yeah, because you go and my guys are walking away. Like, if they didn't have to make Synchrony or Wells, if they didn't have the credit for that, we were done. It was killing me. I mean, they sold. Units sold. They don't have the money. When I talked to some of these guys when I was on the West Coast looking at some of the smaller companies, they didn't do financing. I'm like, how do you do this? Oh, they combine three credit cards or four credit cards. I'm like, and they can't take little Timmy to Chuck E. Cheese. Like,
exactly.
But you're killing them. What are you killing them for? You don't have to do it that way.
They all have
One guy in Naples says to me, they all have money. I said, really? You're right next door to a Kia dealership. Do they all have money? I mean, they're not all driving the Mercedes.
No.
They sell Kias out there. You think they're buying them for cash? I don't think they are, to be honest with you. Right? but 100%.
All right, guys. Well, we'll wrap this up. If you're listening, guys, thank you. We'll have Mike on again. We'll see you on the next episode, 28. Will be the next one. That's 28 different weeks there, Jace. We're getting up there. We're going to have to
start
season two. But hey, if you're listening, thanks. And we'll have Mike on again soon. Mike, we appreciate your time, brother.
Thanks, Mike.
You guys take care. Take care.
Take care, buddy.
Thomas.